Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to share with you this week's Parshas Lech Lecha's Parsha Perspectives. Now, I want to start with a very enigmatic line from the Kotzker Rebbe. The Kotzker Rebbe said something that's very incredible and more enigmatic than incredible. He said that Avram Avinu did not have Emunah. Haran, his brother, had Emunah. What in the world could it mean that Avram Avinu, the father of Emunah, didn't have Emunah, but Haran, who was second, certainly, to Avram Avinu, did have Emunah? I'd like to share with you the following thought. We remember when we were starting from being in first grade, and we learned the story of course, Abraham with his father Terach's store of idols, and what happened where Avraham broke all the idols, and ultimately Terach brings his son Avraham to his whippersnapper's son to Nimrod, none other than Nimrod, to deal with this young man who's not so abiding by the idolatrous norms of the community. So Nimrod says to him, my little boy Avraham, I would like you to bow down to this fire burning in my fireplace. And Avram says to him, well, why should I bow down to fire? After all, water could extinguish fire. Let me bow down to water. So Nimrod says, that's a very good point. Okay, bow down to water. And Avram says, well, why should I bow down to water? After all, the clouds in the heavens carry water. Okay, so bow down to the clouds. Avraham, ever the young whippersnapper, responds, well, why should I bow down to the clouds? After all, the wind could scatter the clouds. Nimrod says, that's a good idea. Okay, bow down to the wind. And so Avram says, why should I bow down to the wind? Let me bow down to you, to a man who could withstand the pressure of wind. At which point Nimrod says to him, you see, you're just trying to pull my leg. You're just playing games with me. I bow down to fire, and I'm going to throw you into fire. And let's see if the God that you believe in will save you from that fire. And of course, that's the story of Urkastim. And what's important for my point today is Haran, his brother's reaction. Haran looks aside and wonders to himself, should I join Avram or should I not join Avram? And Haran sort of makes a deal with himself and says, well, if Avraham comes out alive, and indeed his God does save him, so I'll just join the ranks of Avraham. And I too will deny idolatry, and I'll be willing to throw myself into the Kivshan Ha'esh. On the other hand, if Avraham gets burnt up, so I'll just bow down to the idol like Nimrod wants me to. And that was the story of Avraham being saved. Ultimately, Haran died. He died in the Kivshan Ha'esh. And that's what the Pasuk says in this past week's Parsha. Vayomas Haran al Pnei Terach Aviv. He died during Terach's life. With Terach somehow little minimal of involvement, Haran was killed. How was he killed? He was killed because he threw himself into the Kivshan Ha'esh following Avraham's lead. But ultimately, Avraham lived, Haran did it. Now the question is, Avraham, I understand, Hashem saved him. He had Messias Nefesh. Why didn't Haran get saved? I understand he wasn't a leader. He was a follower. But it's so terrible to be a follower of someone who's great. Why should it be that Avram Avinu will be Zocha to be saved for his Messias Nefesh, but Haran, who had the same Messias Nefesh, was willing to be thrown into the same exact cauldron, furnace, whatever it might be, the Kivshan Ha'esh, but because he didn't have the initiative, because he was a follower, that's a reason for him to die a miserable death? What's so bad? So we have to step into the mind of Avram Avinu before he did make that incredible decision to be willing to be thrown into the Kivshan Ha'esh. And I try to understand, what in the world was he thinking? Let me ask you a question. Did Avram say to himself, you know what? I believe that there's a God. I believe there's a HaKadosh Baruch Hu Borei Olam. And therefore, I'm confident that if I throw myself into the Kivshan Ha'esh for the sake of the Borei Olam, for this creator of the world, he's going to save me. And therefore, I have every reason to throw myself in because I'm sure and I'm confident that God will not forsake me. How could I die if I'm standing up for God's sake? Was that what was going through Avram Avinu's mind? Or maybe he was thinking something totally differently. Maybe Avram Avinu was saying, it's better that I die a death of truth than live a life of idolatrous falsehood. If I die, at least I die doing the right thing. But I have to do what's right. And because I have to do what's right, if I die or I live, that's second to whether I do what's right. The more important thing is for me to do what's right. And so Avraham Avinu threw himself into the Kivshan Ha'esh, doing what's right, not knowing that he's going to live. Which one of those two thoughts was going through Avraham Avinu's mind? Well, says the Kotzker Rebbe, it's clear that what Avram Avinu was thinking about was not that, oh, I'm sure, I have emunah, I'm going to be saved. No, 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 no. Avram didn't know that he was going to be saved. He had no reason to think. Why should anyone who jumps into, who's thrown into a fiery furnace live? Of course not. Avram jumped to his death. Avram was thrown to his death willingly. And he said to himself, I have to die for the sake of truth. For the sake of this God that I believe is a true God, and everything else is false, I'm going to give my life for it. And because Avram Avinu was Moser Nefesh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed a nes for him and saved him. However, Haran, what did Haran say? Haran said, if Avram lives, then I'll go. So when Haran was allowed himself to be thrown into the Kivshan Ha'esh, he was thinking what? He was thinking, let me be saved. Let me be saved just like Avram Avinu. And therefore, Haran was never Moser Nefesh. If Haran was never Moser Nefesh, there's no reason for Hashem to save him. He wasn't Moser Nefesh. He didn't have that willingness to give his life up for Hashem. And therefore, says the Kotzker, Avram Avinu did not have emunah. He didn't have emunah that he would live. He had emunah to do what was right, but he didn't have emunah that he would live. So he lived. Haran had emunah that he would live. And therefore, he didn't live. Therefore, he was killed in the Kivshan Ha'esh. What we see from this is a certain type of emunah. We have a type of emunah that we learn from Avram Avinu, where it's an emunah to do what's right, not because it's going to end up being better for me. It's an emunah to do what's right because it's right. You know, sometimes you talk to your kids when they're, let's say, in elementary school, or your students, and you tell them, you know what, you should be honest. You know what, you should be honest? Because honest kids always end up on top. That's not good chinuch. That's not why you're honest. It's not that if you'll be honest, you'll end up getting, you know, you'll get paid back. No, you're honest because you have to be honest. Not because you'll end up making money later, you'll end up being something. No, you have to be honest because you have to be honest. That's the emunah of Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu taught us, and is teaching us, that when we have emunah, we have to do what's right, and we have to be willing to throw ourselves into the furnace, not because we're confident that Hashem will save us, because it's the right thing to do. Okay, if we do the right thing, maybe Hashem will save us, maybe He won't. But that's the nature of Avram Avinu's emunah. And it's an emunah that we have to follow what Hashem teaches us, what the Torah teaches us, what Chazal teaches us. My mind says this. Logic dictates this. And somehow the Torah says otherwise. And I don't understand why. I don't understand how. I don't understand why it should, why it happened, why it should happen, why it will happen, why. I don't know why. But that's what the Torah says. That's what Chazal say. And therefore I have to do that, regardless of whether my mind, my logic, my heart, every fiber of my being is pointing the other way. Avram wanted to live, no less than any other person. But his emunah taught him otherwise. And that's the unique emunah that Avram Avinu teaches us. And in a certain sense, that's the emunah that we see in some of the other nisyonos. When we see Avram's nisyon of Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha itself. Going to Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't just, okay, pick up and leave and go to Eretz Yisrael. That, okay, for whatever reason, Hashem wants me not here, He wants me there. But what happens the second Avram Avinu gets to Eretz Yisrael? After he gives up everything, his whole past and his family connection and his childhood and his youth and his culture where he grew up in. And I have to move to this forsaken land of Eretz Yisrael. And the second he gets to Eretz Yisrael, there's a famine and he has to leave. So like, you'd assume that there'd be annoyance, bickering, whatever it is, like something would happen with Avram's mindset. No, he was told to go, so he went. It didn't work out there. It wasn't that, oh, Avram thinks, oh, if I go to Eretz Yisrael, Hashem wants me to go, everything's going to work out great. Who says? Why do you go to Eretz Yisrael? Because that's what's going to be better for you? Yeah, Hashem said, Lech Lecha, Lahanascha, will be good for you. The first Rashi points out you'll grow in number and multitudes and wealth and in fame. But that's not why Avram Avinu went. He went because that's what he was supposed to do. If it works out well, great. It didn't work out well. He had to leave the day he got there. We find the same thing with Akedas Yitzchak. Akedas Yitzchak doesn't make sense. Didn't make any sense. He didn't do it because it made sense. His emunah in Hashem to fulfill the nisayon of Akedas Yitzchak was, that's what Hashem wants him to do. That's what he does. And that's a type of emunah that's very hard for us to really wrap our minds around, because that's exactly the point. Emunah sometimes demands us to push ourselves to the limits even beyond that which our mind and our logic might dictate. With this idea, there's a beautiful B'nai Yisraschar, who tries to explain a few words at the end of the parasha, the end of Lech Lecha. During Bris Bein HaBesarim, there is one line that's really very difficult to understand. The line says like this, V'he'emin b'Hashem, Avram had emunah in Hashem. It's explicit in the Torah that Avram had emunah. Wow. Hashem described, the Torah describes Avram as somebody who had emunah. And then the next three words. Vayachsheveha lo litzdakah. And he considered it to be tzedakah. Hashem considered Avraham to be tzedakah, to give tzedakah. Avraham considered that Hashem was giving tzedakah. There are too many pronouns here. He considered it to be tzedakah to him. Who's the him? Who's the it? Who's the he? Who's the object? Who's the subject? We need some antecedents. There are too many pronouns. I want to share with you a beautiful idea for the Bnei Yisachar. He says the following. He says that we see one other place in the Torah, a very similar phrase to this line of Vayachsheveha Hashem Litzdaka. I'm sorry, Vayachsheveha Lo Litzdaka. It's a line in a totally different context. Later in the Torah, in the middle of, in Tvarim, it says that if you lend somebody money, you lend somebody, let's say, I don't know, $10,000, and he buys a car. I'm sorry, he lends him $10,000 because he needs money. But you don't trust him, so you take a collateral. You take his car as collateral. So the Torah says that when you take collateral from somebody, if they need this for their normal living, you have to return to them when they need it. So for example, if you take somebody's car, so you could take the car as collateral for the $10,000 loan, but when he has to go to work, when she has to go to work the next morning, you return the car to them so that they could go to work. If you take collateral somebody's, you know, blanket and mattress and pillow, so you could take that as collateral, but when they go to sleep, you have to give it to them every evening when they go to sleep. And the Torah says, Ulecha tehiyeh tzedakah. And this will be for you tzedakah. Same type of phrase, Vayichshever lo litzedakah, here too. The Torah says, when you give that collateral back to the borrower, back to the poor person who needs to borrow money, that will be, you will be giving tzedakah. The Gemara Bava Metzia asks, wait a second, Gemara Bava Metzia Pebez asks, what do you mean? What are you giving? You're giving his car, her car, back to her, back to him. You're giving his pillow and his blanket back to him. Well, that's not tzedakah. Says the Gemara, we learn something incredible from this line of the Torah. From this line of the Torah, we learn that when you take collateral, it is considered you, the lenders. Once you take something as collateral, you are the owner of it. And once you're the owner of it, if you give it back to the person who borrowed the money, who gave you that collateral, giving it is tzedakah. Says the Bnei Yisachar, that's the Gemara Bava Metzia. Says the Bnei Yisachar, that in order for something to be considered tzedakah, you have to give that which you are not given by the person. You have to give something that's your own, and you're giving of your own to someone else. That's what tzedakah means in the Torah, says Bnei Yisachar. And listen to what he says. He said that Hashem gave all of us our minds, our hearts, logic, our thought processes. And for us to serve Hashem with our mind and our heart and our logic and our thought processes is expected. But that's not giving tzedakah to Hashem as if it were. But if a person serves Hashem beyond our mind's capacity, beyond that which our logic might dictate, beyond that which our logical processes, our mental processes, our thought processes might lead to, and we serve Hashem greater than that, more than that, that's tzedakah. Because Hashem gave us our mind, and we return to Him our mind, we're not giving anything additional, anything that was our own. But Hashem gives us our mind, and I serve Hashem with more than my mind, with that which it goes beyond my mind, which I don't even understand or comprehend, or I serve Hashem even with things that don't make sense to me. That's a level of emunah that is beyond that which He gave me, and that's called tzedakah. And therefore, v'hemin b'Hashem, the pasuk says, v'yachshevel lo tzedakah, Hashem considered that Avram's unique emunah, this emunah that we're speaking of, this emunah of trusting in Hashem and doing Hashem's will, even when it doesn't make sense to us, vayachshevel lo tzedakah. That was Avram giving tzedakah as if it were to Hashem. Can you imagine that? Avram giving tzedakah to God? I don't know what those words mean. But yes, says the Bnei Yisachar, because Avram served Hashem more than what logic dictates, to a point where it didn't make sense to Avram and he did it anyway, that's as though he's giving tzedakah to Hashem. I want to perhaps tell you a story that makes this point very clear. During the war, I believe it's a true story, I heard from a person by the name of Rabbi Drucker, who's a Rav in Passaic. During the war, there was a Jewish family who were hiding from the Nazis, and they hid in a certain backyard or barn or basement or attic of a Gentile family who were kind enough and generous enough to host them. And everybody knew, both the Jewish guests and the Gentile hosts knew, that if they were to be discovered by either the Nazis themselves or any of the neighbors who decided to tattle on them. I actually had a story. My own family comes from a city in Poland. I think we were in Apt. I think Apt, where the Apt Rebbe was from. I think that's where it was. We went there with my family last summer, and we met a lady from that city who was an elderly woman who was, and we started talking to us, an elderly Polish woman. We had a Polish tour guide translate for us. And she told us, and I think I've told this story in shul before, she told us, yeah, when I was a little girl, our family in the war, our family took in a young Jewish girl, about 4 or 5 years old. Wow. I was talking to a Polish woman. She was probably in her late 80s, maybe her 90s. And she remembered a little girl who joined their family in 1939, 1940. Her family took in a little Jewish girl. And she said, I remember that little girl. I remember what she looked like. I remember what she was wearing. Until one of the neighbors said that we had this little Jewish girl. So then they took her away and something happened to her. We know what that means. We know where she went. But, you know, this family that hosted this Jewish family and kept them alive and fed them for year after year in hiding, literally risked their lives unquestionably. And it worked. The Jewish family was saved, the Jewish family escaped, and was left intact after the war. So a little while, I don't know if it was months or if it was a few years later, they wanted to come back and pay tribute and say thank you and maybe bring a gift to this family who literally saved them at risk of their own lives. They show up at the door, they contacted them, they sent a message, a mail, a call, whatever it was, to let them know that they're coming, and the family, the host family, knew that they're Jewish and they're kosher, and they got some paper goods, disposable paper goods, to serve them. And the Gentile host welcomes the family, they embrace, and they're all crying about how incredible it is that the Jewish family is so indebted and this family feels so, you know, they were great. They were great. There was great kavura on their part. And the father of the house takes out a bottle of wine and says, let's make a toast in honor of the fact that you were saved, in honor of the fact that we had the merit to participate in being involved in you being saved. He takes out a bottle of wine and he pours into the paper cup and he hands it to the Jewish fellow and he says, let's make a toast. And all of a sudden, what goes on through the mind of this Jewish fellow? There's a halacha. There's a halacha called Stam Yenam. Stam Yenam is that, you know, we're familiar with a different term, with Yain Mevushel. Yain that's not Mevushel. If you have wine that's not Mevushel, that's poured by a Gentile, it's not kosher. It's Derabba Asa, Derabbanan to drink. Here we have somebody who risked his life and the life of his family to save me. I'm alive only because he and his family were willing to sacrifice their lives. How can I not take the cup? It's a slap in the face. How can I not? On the other hand, Torah, the Chazal, say that it's not kosher. I'm not allowed to. That's the kind of emunah that a Jew has to have when our logic dictates one thing and our mind screams one thing, and yet our emunah, we do what the Torah teaches us, which is even that which we don't understand, that just doesn't make sense. If you look at the whole picture, how could it be? How could it be that you shouldn't take the cup and drink this wine? Don't you realize he risked his life for you and his family's life for you, and he did everything for you? It doesn't, sometimes things don't make sense. We're not always able to understand everything. That's what it means to have the emunah of Avraham Avinu, an emunah that not just gives over our mind to Hashem, but we give over more than our mind to Hashem. And that was the difference between Avram Avinu and Haran. Avram Avinu was ready to serve Hashem when it didn't make sense. If I die, I die. I have to serve Hashem. Haran says, I'm willing to serve Hashem as much as it makes sense. If he'll save me, I'll serve him. If he won't save me, I'm not ready to jump into a furnace if it's just because it's the right thing, if I'm going to die. And that was the lesson of Avram Avinu. That's the teaching of Avram Avinu. He models for us how far we have to go in our emunah in him. I want to finish off with one interesting, another perspective about Avraham Avinu and his role in spreading Emunah in a world that was God-forsaken, literally. There's a very unusual Medrash. The Medrash says that Avraham Avinu was like a little bottle of cologne, perfume, that had a really big seal on, a really strong seal on it. long as the seal is sitting, the bottle top is screwed tightly on this bottle of perfume, on this bottle of cologne. You put it in your medicine cabinet. You put it in your chest where you keep your jewelry or your perfumes, your colognes. Well, no smell's going to come out of it until you open the cap and you shake it all around, and all of a sudden the whole room starts smelling like this perfume, like this cologne. So to HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Avraham Avinu, you have something special. I'm going to make you travel all over the world. I'm going to make you travel. Lech Lecha. I'm going to make you travel. And by you traveling, you know what's going to happen? That beautiful smell, that beautiful aroma that you give off, that emanates from you, will be able to be spread throughout the world. So I want to share with you a story that I saw in the Chafetz Chaim al HaTorah of the yeshiva, the Chafetz Chaim's yeshiva in Radin during World War II. During World War I. So at a certain point, the Chafetz Chaim had his yeshiva in Radin, in Russia. And because the Russian front was approaching that area, they had to move the yeshiva further inland, deeper into Russia. And as this was happening during the winter, of course, the prices for food went skyrocketing. There was a war, and it was the winter. And the price for food went skyrocketing, but it is what it is. And the yeshiva traveled away from Radin to a city called Snabusk. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that wrong correctly. But when he got to this small Jewish village or area called Snabusk, the Chafetz Chaim went traveling in those areas to try to raise money to have the boys sit in a yeshiva and some, I don't know, they took over a shul, I guess, and to provide for those boys who were learning in his yeshiva. And it was a small city. It was a small town. It wasn't a big city like, you know, maybe he had, or Chafetz Chaim previously had connections to be able to sustain his yeshiva. So all the Jews there were really farmers, and each of the farmers said, you know, we're happy to host a yeshiva boy. Give us a yeshiva boy, two boys. We'll feed them, you know, we'll take care of them. They'll join our family. Give us one boy, two boys, three boys, and, you know, we'll each. But the Chafetz Chaim wasn't sure that necessarily these families were the type of families that were the right environment. It wasn't a center of Torah scholarship, this city of Snabusk. They were, you know, God, you know, they were perhaps Jews, and they were Jewish, and they were certainly appreciated at Talmud Chacham. It doesn't mean that their food was, was the level of kashrus, and the way that people spoke and carry themselves was the way that the yeshiva boys should be exposed to. So the Chafetz Chaim was very reluctant. And he felt it wasn't worthwhile to do that. So he tried to maintain his yeshiva by borrowing money. And he borrowed, and he borrowed, and he borrowed. And at a certain point, he borrowed a certain amount, thousands of rubles. And at a certain point, he realized that a certain amount he knew he'd be able to collect and to fundraise and to cover his loans. But at a certain point, he realized, I just borrowed too much. I'm not going to be able to cover my loans. You can't borrow money if you don't know where you're going to pay it back. And he said, I guess my plan of keeping the yeshiva intact is not what Hashem wants. And the Chafetz Chaim did an about-face, and the model of the yeshiva switched. The yeshiva as a centralized yeshiva was no longer the model, and he sent a few boys to this house, a few boys to this house, a few boys to this house, and he said to himself that maybe that's what Hashem wants. Maybe I was so worried about making sure that my yeshiva boys should be insulated, shouldn't be impacted by the people in whose houses they're staying. I guess Hashem is telling me otherwise. I guess Hashem is telling me that I have to send my yeshiva boys into those houses, so those houses should be impacted by the yeshiva boys. Let those boys travel all around to all the different houses where they're going to be staying and whoever will be hosting them. They'll continue learning in those houses. They'll continue learning in the little villages and little hamlets, little shtetlach all around this region, and they'll impact all those little shtetlach. With no choice, the Chafetz Chaim, you know, resigned himself to a different model of what he was to expect. So, I just want to finish with, you know, a thought for today. Today is, if I could say, the Yom HaKadosh VaHanora, Lahavdil, Alfi Avdalos. There's a lot of people who are very vested in what the results of tonight's elections are going to be. And there's going to be incredible, incredible emotion in either direction, depending on what the results are going to be. And, you know, sometimes we could have a plan, we could think we know what's right, we could think we know what's right for the Jews, we could think we know what's right for Torah, we could think we know what's right. But one thing I know, who's the best person for the Jews, I don't know. One thing I do know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do with the world what he thinks should happen. And therefore, on some level, we have to do what the Chafetz Chaim did. He thought, he planned, he intended. If Hashem says otherwise, it's otherwise. And therefore, we have to sometimes submit our minds, what we think is right, just like Avraham Avinu taught us that we have to sometimes submit our logic to Hashem's logic, to our thought process, to the thought process of Torah. Well, we do our hishtadlus. We think we have the idea of who's best and what's good for us and for Eretz Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows better than us. Whatever He decides, He knows what He's doing. We could have faith in what He's doing. We could have emuna that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will run the world the way He thinks the world should be run. We should daven to that it should be in a way that we could see clearly, but ultimately to have faith and to have emuna that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world the way He wants it, the way our world should be heading towards, and feel a comfort no matter what happens, no matter what the results may or may not be. We can feel comforted and feel secure knowing that we're in Hashem's hands and He'll take care of us and ultimately bring us to our ultimate goal.